This is Katrina, and this is Zooming in the Lens podcast. It's adventures of spiritual dialogue with us from the streets of rock and roll into the shifts of perceptions. We hope Zooming in the Lens can bring us all together, sharing the stuff of life and practice, suffering and grace. And we're really grateful to all of you who might be listening to our rants with compassion and curiosity. For more information, visit us at functionalyogaonline.com. Hey, everybody. This is Katrina with Zooming in the Lens podcast. We have a very special guest today. You know, we've been talking about parenting differences from, I don't know, 70, 60, 50, 40 years ago in comparison to today. And you all know that I love Ram Dass, and he's my teacher. And I've been working with him on Zooming in the Lens online course for a while now. And he's got a bit about, it was when somebody was asking him a question of how to keep your kids in soul awareness. And I found it really interesting. So I'm going to play that first. It's just a 2-minute clip you're going to hear of him responding to a question that came from the audience from years ago. And I'm lucky enough today to have the person that I counted on most as a parent, which is my mother. So she came into town to visit me. I figured if I was going to talk about parenting, the best person I could talk about it with would be my own mother. So I'm going to play this Ram Dass. And, you know, my mom isn't really a spiritual seeker. So to her, I would love to see what her opinion is on what Ram Dass says. And we can just sort of start there. And we're riffing. We're obviously not doctors. We obviously don't have any one way that we're trying to say anybody should be parenting. It's really a very individual journey, as is the spiritual journey. But it does help when you can cross the barriers of generations like this. And I don't know how many people have had discussions with their parents from a place of freedom to talk about it rather than being told how to bring up their kids. And I don't have children right now, so I have the experience that I've had is bringing up my niece, and we were really, really close, and I do consider myself a second mother to her. So I have, you know, the experience as best as you can from that angle, and my mother has raised 4 daughters in, you know, the ups and downs of what marriage brings you during that process. She had to have her own job. So there were times when she was even maybe feeling like a single mom. But that all has to do with the differences of parenting from today and back when she was little, and even during her teen years and her 20s and her 30s and growing up. And so I'm going to play this. It's that piece from Ram Dass, and then we're going to hear what the wise Jan Chester has to say. So here we go.
How do you keep the children in some sort of soul awareness? And the answer is by you being in soul awareness. And there's no other way. You can't send them to lectures or have them read books. It's got to be who you are. And that's why a parent works on themselves as their gift to their children. Because as long as you are trying to do good for your children in terms of I am my a mother and that is my child and that's all you are sucking that child into thinking that role relationship is the absolute reality. What you are is another being who's meeting this being, and that being, just like you feel about every human being all the time, I wish you were free of suffering. And the way you'd be free of suffering is that if you were more conscious, you would be free of suffering. And the way I can help you be more conscious is for me to be an environment that doesn't close you down, basically, because you already are all of this, but my mind and the minds of people around you will keep closing you down. And that's why our educational systems are like, they're really like some horrible thing that is out of the best intentions. This is not out of evil. We're all trying to do good. And I don't care whether you're doctors or teachers or social workers or parents or whatever. When you are involved with other human beings, the work on yourself is a critical part of the gift you offer to the other human being. And that's got to be really clear in your consciousness. Because you can't have a child. I mean, it's really figuring out how to do the least damage in the process of being a parent. Isn't that weird? I mean, it's a terribly negative way to say it, but, and I don't mean to say it that way, because I really do. I treasure the relation between parent and child and think it can be incredibly beautiful. Yeah. Yes.
Wow. So, everybody, here's Jan Chester. What do you think about that, Mom?
Well, it was all very general.
How so?
That the relationship between the parent and the child should exist and be nurtured. I find that the main thing with bringing up a child is they've got to have a sense of security. They've got to know the parents are there to take care of them. They're not going to be abandoned. They're going to be fed. They're going to be clothed. They normally are taught the morals that are acceptable, mm-hmm. which is important. Mm-hmm. Not that everybody ever follows it, but at least you know what they are.
Right.
So you know if you're screwing up, you're aware that you're screwing up.
Right.
And parents should be aware that their children are going to make a lot of mistakes, and they have to just be there for them.
Well, is there an age or anything that the knowing your parents are going to feed you and clothe you and take care of you, is there an age that that would, there could be an integration, like a balance of them starting to be able to do that for themselves?
Oh, well, that's just a matter of children getting older and maturing. You wouldn't let a 6-year-old make their own breakfast, but you sure would let a 10-year-old do it.
Right.
You know, it's just whatever age you're at brings with it certain capabilities that right. you don't have or couldn't do the right way if you were the wrong age.
Right.
So basically, I think by the time a kid is like 12 to 13, they should be able to really, if they had to, even live on their own.
Wow.
I mean, they should be a fully functioning entity.
Right. What do you see as, like, what does the word soul awareness mean to you when you hear Ram Dass say this person's question, you know, how do I keep my child in soul awareness? And him responding with, you don't. You, as the parent, have to be practicing soul awareness. You are in soul awareness. Otherwise, what he's saying is that you're just passing on this rule book of where society and education and culture tells us to be.
It all boils down to the philosophy of practice what you believe. Live the life that you think is productive and, you know, that you're doing the best you can.
Right.
And that's all you could really teach them.
Yeah.
You know, and I do believe that personality is like very big in the upbringing of a child, because children are born with different personalities and you can't make them conform one way if they're not set that way.
Right. I'm a huge proponent of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everybody's not the same. So you parent
that's
per
right.
child, right?
And that's why with you, we were lucky to be in a school district where they recognized that not everybody is the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope you don't mind me mentioning
no,
this.
I've told them all about
and
it.
And you were put into a program called Quest.
Right.
That really totally straightened you out.
Yeah.
And it was really good, and I don't know if they have it anymore in East Rampo, but it's such a good idea to have alternative schooling for those kids that just can't conform to the regular everyday curriculum.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, then how do you rectify in your mind the educational system? How everybody has to go through the same grades, learn the same curriculum, learn the same history, the same everything.
Well, you got to start somewhere. where would you start? You can't start in the middle of nowhere.
Right. So you're saying it's a good shell to get them started, but if there were more things like alternative ways to learn,
right.
then it could feed the soul of the child rather
just
than...
Just like you have preschool, and then you have kindergarten, and then you go into your first to 12, you know. Everything has its place.
How do you think people learn how to parent?
You know, that's really amazing. I don't know how I did it because I didn't really have parents. And there was something within me that just did it and knew what to do. And it just was like there. I don't know where it came from.
Well, it's nature, right?
I guess. It was just... Also knowing the things that I never had that I wanted my kids to have, you know?
Yeah.
The feelings of like taking them out of school in the middle of the day just so we could go have a little fun.
Yeah.
To me, that was like showing them that life isn't all just mundane and there are adventures to be had. And,
right.
You know, the main thing is, for a child is they've got to have curiosity.
Without a doubt.
Mm-hmm. And that just came to me because I didn't have a childhood at all.
Yeah. Did you question yourself throughout, like every time?
No, it was strange. Like each time I had a child, I would say to myself, why am I having this?
Yeah, of course. It's good. I think more people should ask themselves that question.
Yeah. But I think in my case, I was trying to build my own family from scratch, you know.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have one. I figured, okay, let me make one. <You
know>? Yeah.
And of course, and then I married a man who was more like a father to me.
Right.
And it wasn't until many years later that I almost like outgrew him.
Right.
Because I didn't take his word as being the final, you know, final thing that I would believe. I started to question him. But that's after 30 years of marriage.
Right.
And, you know, he changed too during that period.
I think so.
So maybe that's why I was questioning him as his opinions and stuff like that.
What do you think the basis of a good marriage is?
I guess it's good sex.
Yeah.
And communication. And having a sort of a same kind of philosophy in life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like if one of my daughters would go out in a low-cut dress or something and looking a little bit hoary, my husband would always disapprove, disapprove. It was years later that I read a book by Dr. Susan Friend called Men Who Hate Women and the Women Who Love Them.
Wow.
And it was like, oh, this is what he is. He's a misogynist. I didn't know there was a label for that.
Wow, that must have been relieving for you.
Oh,
huh?
My God. It was like a light went on.
Yeah.
And I realized all the years I had spent with him that he really hated women.
Yeah, it's really, I don't know if everybody could hear that, but that's, what is it?
Geese?
A gaggle of geese.
I don't know. Is that a gaggle?
That word. A gaggle. Yeah, there's a bunch of geese going overhead if you hear that. I wonder if when we enter into marriage, if we even really have the conscious thought that we will grow. Now, I know, like, we all hope we grow together, but how can people get into marriage if that's what they want to do, but keep an open mind that without villainizing divorce? Because I think it's a really hard topic. Because people, when they're getting married, they don't want to hear about, well, you better think about divorce, too. Nobody's going to say that to you. Obviously, you're getting married, and you have all this hope and all this belief systems are wrapped around it. But wouldn't it be a more, I mean, we all know things change. We all know that everything that's in time shifts. We all know that we grow.
You're talking as if that's a fact. However, in my generation, we didn't know anything.
Well, what do you mean you didn't know anything?
We weren't conscious of the self. We weren't conscious that everything changes and grows. We were just sort of like the bus driver, just driving the bus, not thinking about anything.
Well, and that's just you, because some of the most profound books and people came around about your time.
Yeah, no, you're right.
You're born in 1937. Mm-hmm. You're 76 now.
No, I'm 78.
78, there you go.
There you go, your own mother.
Yeah, I know. So you're 78 now. So there were a lot of people rising up at your time and some profound
like Timothy
thought.
Timothy Leary.
Absolutely, yeah. Aldous Huxley.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's too numerous to mention, right? So, but you just weren't in there.
There was a book called The Prophet by Khalil Gibran, I think. Mm-hmm. I can't pronounce his name, but that was like a breakthrough.
Right. So you just weren't in that clique of people, although my father, your husband, tended to be quoting Zen.
He tended to quote a lot, but a lot of it was all bullshit.
Yeah? You think so?
Well, I mean,
How do you know that if you didn't know it?
Just knowing him. Like, it's almost like reading the authors off the cover of a book that somebody wrote and reading all the authors, but never opening the book.
Ah.
I mean, he'd probably have more knowledge than I'm giving him credit for.
Yeah, because he definitely shared a lot with me, so I think it's perception on how you take
it. Yeah, I probably was not a very deep person then. Mm. I was more concerned with my lifestyle, cementing my relationship by having a lot of kids.
Right.
Because he already had two.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so glad when I had four girls because they weren't competing. And I noticed that he competed with his sons.
Interesting. Which is that part of the misogynist thing?
I think so. I don't know. Mm. It used to upset the hell out of me, the way that he would say he was a good father, but yet, because they were still living with his ex-wife, and she held them over his head like a sword, he really wasn't. He was almost like in competition with them.
Did you feel at times that you were a single parent?
No.
It appeared like that to me at times, as your daughter.
Well, I acted like I was a single parent because he just shoved it off on me. But, I don't know. I had problems with him letting things slide and letting things slide. And then all of a sudden, like, he had this revelation and he punished, but way more than whatever the transgression was, he would punish way more than should be, and mm-hmm. then I would fight with myself. Do I step in mm-hmm. and say to him, that's not fair, which would piss him off? Or do I let my kids get punished unfairly?
Mm. So then parenting really does have, if you're doing it as a couple, it has everything to do with marriage.
Well,
I mean,
not marriage, just with the relationship you have with the father.
Yeah, and I'm using marriage loosely because I'm looking at it as two people coming together, whether they're legally married or not, if you're in a committed relationship, let's say. Mm-hmm. So I had asked, I imagine that anytime we meet with something and we're opposed to it or we can't let in the light and the dark or the negative or the positive, the people I've come across in the last 10 years, some of them, when they're getting married, they're more wrapped up in, I've found the person for the rest of my life, which to me feels like they're definitely not thinking about the now or the present. They're thinking that this is the person forever, but that's not taking into account that you're going to change and they're going to change. And then because of these belief systems, we get wrapped up in that divorce is a failure. Divorce shouldn't happen. It's not fair. What if we entered into committed relationships, legal or not, with no expectations, without this big umbrella over it of the right and wrong way, letting in the light and the dark of it. Because being divorced myself, belief systems become permanent fixtures in your mind, it feels like. There was no choice for divorce in my mind until it occurred to me. And I think belief systems, just through the generation that I grew up in, and because I watched you not get a divorce, it didn't even occur that it would be an option now. So we've almost gone, like, and I know the divorce rate is so much higher now, but the stress rate of deciding to divorce, having the nerve to actually get the divorce, all of that stuff is, it's changing so many people's lives because we're all trying to either get rid of a, like an albatross around our neck from a Catholic or religious upbringing that divorce isn't okay, whatever it is, your parents not thinking it's okay because we have such huge generational gaps.
But I think mostly today it's the fact that you're breaking up the family, which could destroy the kids. And that's the most thought that I give divorce is like, what does it do to the kids? You can get divorced if you have no kids and it doesn't mean anything, you know?
Yeah, okay, but I'm a child, right, of parents that fought.
Mm-hmm.
There were many nights that you and Daddy would be fighting,
uh-huh.
And I would beg God for you two to get a divorce. Now, was I standing in awareness at that time? If it really happened, would I have been okay with it? I have no idea. But all I know is that I wanted my mom happy and my dad happy. And that's not even taken into account that that might be separately. It's yeah. Like the parents that are deciding whether or not it would be good for the kids. And I know it's because you can't ask a kid because that's maybe too much pressure or it's not psychologically right or they won't answer correctly or whatever the case may be. But being in soul awareness, you have to go into things knowing that people grow and change and it's you might grow and change separately. And at what point do you look at the child and have to make a decision that they'd rather not hear you fighting all night?
Yeah.
So I'm just sort of creating a dialogue around that. I don't know what's right. Who knows what's right for a child, whether the parents should stay together or not? Who really knows?
Nobody. And you just got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
That's it. That's what it comes down to.
Right.
And had my life been different, had I had a support system, like a mother that I could run home to when things got bad, or anybody, actually, my life would have been so totally different. But when you're a woman alone, mm-hmm. with no relatives, no friends, no mother, no nothing, where the hell do you go with little kids? What are you going to do? You can't support yourself. You got to take care of the kids. You can't go out and work. Mm-hmm. Where are you going to live? How are you going to pay the rent? All that stuff comes into it. And maybe the generations now, somehow they find support systems. But in my day, there was nothing. If you didn't have relatives that would take you in or mm-hmm. whatever, you just shit out of luck.
Yeah. No, I'm sure that was really hard.
Well, it is hard. I mean, what are you going to do? You can't go out and make a living. And so then it comes down to the money. The man has to support you till the kids are bigger and, you know, will be okay. When they're little, what are you going to do?
When they're little, it's definitely. There's so many people out there listening to this that are dealing with that right now.
Yeah.
So maybe us all having more consciousness before we have kids. Asking ourselves, why are we having kids?
No, because you never know.
You never have the answers, ever.
You don't know why you're having kids now and you're not waiting or whatever. It's just life goes on. It's like click, 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 click. Each little increment, something else happens. And you just go with the flow.
Yeah.
And that's why I envy anybody that has like a mother or a father or an aunt, somebody that will like back them up. You know, just give them that little extra strength, maybe to go out and find daycare so you could go get a job.
Right.
You know, maybe find medical things for a child that needs medical help and you don't know what to do.
Right.
You need a backup system. Without a backup system, it's like you're just a jellyfish floating in the water, just hoping somebody will come along and you could sting them or something, you know?
Well, and I do agree that we all need each other and we're community-based species. But what about being there for yourself? What about building up that part of you that it's not like, oh, I don't need anybody kind of vibe. It's that I have to stand up for me. I have to be there for me. And it's not all about a man or an aunt or a grandmother.
It takes counseling to get to a place like that. You can't just do it. Maybe you can, but I never could.
No, I mean, that's why I practice.
Right. No, it's hard. And...
Well, parenting has really changed, you know, from your time, even when you were little, to when you became a parent, to when you were on your last kid, me.
Mm-hmm.
I have this article that I had found that I found really interesting. It was pre-1960 parenting versus parenting today. A list of some of the more memorable elements of pre-1960s parenting is in constant circulation on the internet and is especially popular with people this person's age who can, for obvious reasons, relate. The items include that we drank from garden hoses and survived, didn't wear bike helmets and survived.
Could have seat belts.
Right. Could only take a test once and never had to see a psychologist for test anxiety and so on. The point is that kids in the pre-micromanagement and pre-coddling days enjoyed a freedom that kids today, by and large, don't even know they're missing. What do you think of that?
Yeah, that's an excellent article.
Oh, it goes on and on to say some really interesting points. And I know people my age, absolutely, are always talking about back in the day, you know, my dad rolled up the windows and smoked a pack of cigarettes.
You didn't believe it when I told you that we had a playpen in the back of our station wagon.
I mean, listen to that, people. That's horrific now. Could you imagine?
With a fold-down little, what do you call them? Like a gate, I guess you'd say.
In the station wagon.
In the station wagon. And if you roll down the back window of the station wagon, the playpen was there, and you could fold down this little gate and stick the kid in there. And many of the times I drove around.
With no seatbelt on the kids.
No seatbelt. The kids, maybe I even had two in this.
You know, now people barely will even do that with their animals because they're scared their animals will get hurt.
I know.
Wow. Well, in the time I was, 3 weeks old and you took me on a plane to Jamaica?
Right.
Like, as if you, first of all, now you have a baby. I don't know any woman, maybe one, that after having a baby 3 weeks later would want to go to Jamaica.
Oh, I couldn't wait.
So it was just a different, completely different time. And you put me on the plane and she describes to me that above her head while she's sitting in the plane is like a hammock.
Yeah.
Like a baby hammock. And you just put me up there.
It's a sky cradle, yeah.
A sky cradle.
That's right. And then when we got there, I had a nanny for $20 a day and I hardly ever saw you.
That's fantastic.
Well.
I mean, probably not fantastic for me, maybe, but.
No, you were happy. You just.
Little, yeah. Yeah, so what is going on now? Like, what must be going on through your mind when you see people sitting there and saying to their child, what do you want for dinner?
Well, of course, but don't you think that's how each generation progresses? Who knows what the next generation, they may have the kid cooking the dinner, I don't know.
So you've made room already in your mind that you don't know it all. And that the way you brought up your kids was partly generational, partly, like, you don't even know, nature.
It was mostly nature, because I really never had a childhood. And I just did the things that I thought should be done. That was about it.
What do you think about all the ADD and ADHD? And, like, back in your day, that stuff wasn't really happening. That didn't exist. No.
Well, sometimes I think if they didn't have all these labels, mm-hmm. that kids would come out different.
Do you think? So that goes to perception and belief systems, and if everybody tells you.
I don't know. It's like your sister has a son mm-hmm. that in my day is perfectly fine. But because she's a special ed teacher,
yeah,
right away from the minute he's around, he becomes like a patient or something.
Ah.
I mean, whoever heard of any of these ADD and all that other stuff?
Yeah. And I mean, we just don't know, because could it be higher mercury? Could it be like our food is totally affecting us? That could be. But at the same time, it's completely different parenting now than it was when there was no ADHD or ADD. And I'm not saying there was none. Maybe they were just lesser, way lesser accounts of it.
I don't know. All I remember is like being maybe 10 or 11 years old and letting myself into the apartment by myself and making myself a sandwich. And
do you know how many stories like that I hear? I hear a lot of those stories, but now a 10-year-old, you would be arrested for child abuse.
Right.
Child endangerment, you know? Mm-hmm. And I wonder, this, you know, I think this article goes on to say that the biggest differences, however, were summed up nicely by a friend who knew, it's a quote. He says, "We knew who was running the household, and it wasn't us."
Right.
That's a big difference from now.
Well, even when Gail says to Donnie, "What do you want to eat? I want to kill her."
Well, that's what this article is talking
you
about.
You don't do that. You know, you say, "This is what's for dinner."
But where's that line between being able to parent to each child and just law? You shouldn't ask your kid what they want for dinner, but what if the child, their personality, that is working? And I think what you're saying is it doesn't work for Gail's child because you've not seen the results.
What I'm trying to say is you need a stronger parent than most parents are. You need them to know who's boss. And they need discipline. And discipline makes kids feel secure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you don't get it, like, when I was a child, I could do anything I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
I lived with my 65-year-old grandmother, who never even got out of bed most of the time. And I was on my own.
But and that led you to make decisions that you weren't.
I made some horrible decisions, yes. But that's in the past.
Yeah. And how do we learn now? I think maybe have we gone overboard? This article goes on to talk about our parents did not seek our opinion about such things as what we would want to eat for dinner, and did not care whether we approved of their choices or not. Furthermore, they did not care about how we felt about any decision they made. We were given reason to control our emotions rather than let them control us. If you don't think that's a good thing, you're controlled by your emotions, I'm sorry. Our parents did not saturate our lives with things, nor did they plan our activities. Therefore, from an early age, we learned to entertain ourselves. They gave to us very conservatively. Therefore, we were grateful for whatever they did give us. They valued their marriage. Well, and he goes on to talk about that, and I don't find that to be accurate for anybody, maybe, but him.
What I remember mostly is like, at the age maybe of 9 or 10, saying I was going out. Now, this is in an apartment house in the mm-hmm. middle of Manhattan yet.
Right.
And I'm going out to play.
Right.
And I would just go out by myself. Nobody was watching me.
Could you imagine doing that today?
No.
And then you went on to raise me not like that. So I had to be in before dark. I had to tell you where I was all the time.
I did everything that I thought I should do.
Right.
Because it wasn't done to me.
Right. But, and you, so you're admitting, nobody knows how to parent, right? And I think the best advice you ever gave me, because I don't think parenting is limited to, firstly, a biological child, because there's lots of amazing parents out there that didn't learn by the natural, you know, birth process, but they're great parents. But you also can be a parent to many things. You can be a parent to, an animal, obviously, but you could be a mother to students. You could be a mother to friends. You could be a loving, nurturing person in general to lots of things in life. So to me, the ultimate experience would be to have a biological child or a child at all, even if not biological. But through my own practice, I realized that the mother instincts don't go away for me. They are there, and I expand them without having just linear vision of like what society says a mother is. A mother is lots of things. And what you're saying is, in a way, the gift that I've also been given is that I've had to create that feeling of independence and self, that feeling of self through myself. And I look at a lot of people that have children, and immediately the first thing they say is, forget your life as you know it. And there's not a lot of other things. I cannot imagine that there are a lot of other things that thrust you completely out of your routine, what you thought your life was, what you thought you were. I've seen mothers that are so worried about how they're going to have this little amount of sleep because they're people that have slept 10 to 13 hours a day prior to children. So they've labeled themselves as people that need sleep. That child comes out, they are grateful for 3 hours of sleep. Where did that person go? And what you're saying is, you just do it.
You
just arrive in the moment.
That's true. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. You're just arriving at the moment, which is basically what we're all practicing, being present, arriving in the moment. There are things that we just don't have answers for. What's the right parenting thing? What's the right this? But what I do agree with is that whatever you are identifying with in you is going to directly reflect on your parenting. So if you think that all there is are the things that you think and feel, what I always call Katrina 2, just the mind. If you feel that that's all there is in you, then your only parenting resources are going to be that you need to spread that knowledge. And if you want a child that isn't looking for somebody to take care of them, I mean, it's great to have somebody to take care of you, but when you have to have somebody to take care of you, it feels a lot different, as you know. So this, I feel like the parenting today is at least cultivating parents that might be self-studying more. And so that's why they're a little softer and a little nicer. And I think, you know, it takes maybe a generation for that to even out and find a balance between being, addressing a parenting as per child. And I want to make you happy as your parent. I want to make you happy and bringing in the discipline at the same time. I think right now, from what I could witness from the outside in, there is too much coddling going on. What do I know, right? But I read this. It was this report. It talks about an article published recently in Psychology Today that talks about helicopter parenting.
Helicopter parenting?
Yeah.
Flying in and flying out?
Flying in and flying out of different systems, cherry picking. And I mean, that's what I took it to mean. I don't honestly have a ton of research done on what helicopter parenting exactly is. But
why is it that everything has to get labeled?
I completely agree. As part of a set of issues that contribute to an overly sensitive young adult population, young adult oversensitivity is a marked shift in college culture. The author of Declining Student Resilience, A Serious Problem for Colleges, relayed mounting concerns among college counselors, administrators, and professors over the fragileness of current college students. Students cannot handle failure or even mediocre marks.
Really?
They rely on parent guidance and counseling more than any previous generation.
And what survey is that based on? And who did it?
Well, I will put the links up on functionalyogaonline.com. Mm-hmm. But one of them was Psychology Today. Another was quoted from this book. It doesn't say the author's name, but Declining Student Resilience, A Serious Problem for Colleges. And the last one is a Washington Post article. And it's former Stanford Dean Julie Likott-Hames. The negative impact of perpetually presents parents who shelter their children from hardship and failure. She links depression and other mental illnesses to this trending type of overparenting.
I don't know anything about that.
Well, overparenting is, I think, the stuff that you've made comments about of parents making threats and not following through. So if a parent says, if you don't be quiet, or if I'm going to count to three and we're going to leave this baseball game if you don't stop, you know, hitting somebody or whatever it is.
You're never supposed to say anything that you're not prepared to actually do.
Right. According to a lot of these statistics, that's not really happening.
Yeah, well, I could see that it's not happening with one of my own daughters. She threatens and doesn't carry through.
I looked at how today's generation and even, I mean, I think it, I got the best of it because I was just at the end of it. But students not being able to handle failure, and how the education system is trying to make everybody quote unquote special. Right? Because kids' feelings are getting hurt.
You mean like special needs?
No, I mean like there are no winners here.
Oh, I hate
We're
that.
We're all winners. And it's a self-esteem confidence thing to try to get rid of competition. But competition is inherent in the human incarnation.
Okay.
It's been going on for the longest time. So they're trying to make everybody a winner.
Mm-hmm.
And that is contributing to this depression. And so people aren't learning how to fail. And failing is such a big part of growing up.
It reminds me, probably has nothing to do with it, though. But do you remember a game that your father used to play at your birthday parties and stuff where everybody takes off their shoes and throws them in a pile?
Yeah.
In the middle of the room?
Mm-hmm.
And then at a certain point, you're supposed to go and run and get your shoes. And
yeah, he tied different shoes together by the shoelaces.
Yeah.
And then threw them into a pile.
Yeah.
And everybody had to go and find
the
match.
And there was always one winner.
Yeah. Yeah, there was always one winner. And
I thought that was terrific.
It is. It's a great game, but I think everybody's walking on eggshells. Worried that we're producing children that feel so badly and insecure about themselves, but what I'm seeing is more depression. The statistics are showing more depression because if everybody's a winner and everybody's special, then it's not allowing for individual differences. It's still going down the road of that we're all the same, which is what educational systems are based on. Like, everybody is learning the same rate, the same way, and when you're not, you're labeled. So, like, a broader perspective, and like we're the reactions of our lack of searching within the self is that we're trying to fix the small external things like that. Like, everybody's special and they're no losers. But the conception of people feeling that way, I think it's a reaction that we're trying to fix, and we need to get to the role and the model that we're setting for people.
I think that work has to be done on the connection between the child and the parent, the actual connection mentally.
And so translate, like, what would that look like?
How could I translate that? If I don't really know how to put it into words.
Well, what made you feel connected to your children?
I don't know. I wanted the best for them at all times, that's all. And I don't know, I can't put it into words.
Well, I think it's an overall great umbrella, though, to start building on. Just connection and cultivating relationship. It's hard to be the bad guy. It's hard for your kid to turn around and say to you, and it's a teenager, I hate you. But it also is just a part of life sometimes. Not all kids do that, but I think parenting is also being willing to be the bad guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I can remember slamming you up against the wall.
Oh, yeah. I remember that fondly. There is also this really cool stuff about how nobody knows what the right way to parent is, but parenting does directly come from your culture, your belief systems, and the nature and the nurture. But
I know. You know what is getting me with this whole conversation is that I am realizing, or no, it's just sort of punching into me, that I wasn't very aware of anything when my kids were growing up. I just didn't have any concept of all this that you're talking about now. I had no concept of any of it. It was just, it's my kid, let me feed him, let me give nice clean clothes, mm-hmm. teach him right from wrong, bad words from good words. It was never anything so deep.
Right.
And now all of a sudden everything is so goddamn deep. I feel like every time I talk to you, I feel like I'm talking to a psychiatrist.
That's great.
Eat your fucking oatmeal and shut up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm laughing so loud. That's just so funny. I agree with you, though. I really do agree with you. It just may not look like that at times. But I'll tell you, I do agree with you. I think things are being looked at too deeply externally.
Yeah.
It's the personal responsibility and the internal search that I feel the lens should be put on.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you're saying, we don't know if you were awake through your child-rearing years or asleep. Mentally, emotionally, physically, we have no idea, and you don't have any idea. But what we tend to do as people is we take what should be self-study and we look at our children and our students and our work and everything as our external reflection of self.
Oh, definitely, which is why I brag about you so much, because basically it's like saying, see what a good mother I am.
Right,
What a great kid I brought up, and look at her now. You know, like that.
Yeah, yeah, no, I totally get that.
And that's just a reflection, really, on me. I know that.
But even like, just having the awareness of that, Mom, is so good.
Well, I never had that before you started all this stuff.
What I will say is to what you said about everything is so goddamn deep now. What if we
were able to turn that lens on the depth of it. I'm only using your word, but it's not really depth when you look at it. It's more human nature. It's more self-study, and it will appear really deep if that mirror has never been held up. But it's actually a lot more logical of a thinking process.
Okay, here's a word for you. Enlightenment. Enlightenment.
Mm-hmm. What about it?
I feel that now I'm enlightened as far as relationships and stuff. Like, it's like when I first came across that book that I mentioned before. Men Who Hate Women and the Women Who Love Them.
Mm-hmm.
Until that, I read that book and became aware, I had no idea what was wrong with your husband, with your father.
Right, and what I would be saying right now is be less concerned about what's wrong with Daddy and more concerned on your participation in how you are perceiving him and how you can take responsibility to be with yourself inside, because it's very easy for everybody to turn around and say, it's my husband, he's an asshole, it's my kid, it is ADHD, nobody understands. And of course, those all may be true. He may have been an asshole. Your kid might have learning disabilities or advantages, whatever, however you want to put it, like George Carlin says.
I love him.
But we're, when we're looking externally for our sense of self, there, you're always going to find something, because there is, those things exist. People are mean and people do things that are wrong. But what is our personal responsibility in that? And how do we better ourselves? Now, if you're saying that that book enlightened you to understand Daddy better, and then you were able to be kinder to yourself or kinder to him.
I was able to talk back to him with no fear because I realized that he was sick.
And what did that do in your relationship? Who did that create suffering on?
I don't know. I don't know how to answer that. All I know is it gave me the courage to face him.
Which you had all along?
No, because I had little kids and no place to turn.
But you still had no place to turn and you still had little kids.
But
and you,
no,
and you
I
found
didn't.
Out that there was something wrong with him. So that didn't change.
But I didn't still have little kids. I didn't.
What do you mean?
I mean, you guys were like already teenagers.
Right. What I'm saying is that the courage...
I'm telling little
is
kids.
Is always inside of all
two,
of us.
2, 3, 4 years old.
A book doesn't have that kind of power. It just has the match that ignites that power from within you. And that book did that for you.
Yes, it did.
But that was there all along. And that's what spiritual practice is.
What do you mean it was there?
You have everything you're looking for on the outside. Not, I don't mean money and the greatest job. I mean the attributes, the qualities that align you to other people, that make you go, oh, I want that, or I like this because I like who they make me be when I'm around them. There's this element of us in our culture, and I'm not even saying outside. I'm also saying it's outside of America at this point. To look for, to fill the holes in us with outside things and outside people.
Okay.
And courage is, everybody has courage. You're not born and courage is divvied out. And they say, skip Jan Chester. I'm leaving the courage out of her. And that book out popped courage and you placed it inside of you. It doesn't happen like that. I mean, maybe it does, but it doesn't. You know what I mean? So where did that courage come from? It came from the ego mind hearing, it's not my fault. And so then all of a sudden you get courage to stand up to Daddy.
Yeah, it's not my fault, yeah.
Right.
It's true. I always heard all my life, oh, you're a strong person. You can survive. That was, I think it was probably my mother that said that. Took it like whatever was thrown at me, I could handle it. And a lot of shit was thrown at me, and, you know, it wasn't really fair.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I mean, you've had really, really hard times. But you have survived it, so is it true that you're not strong?
I have survived it. Well, no, I am strong, but, I mean, if you want to say walking, like, an inch away from a precipice is surviving, that's how I survived. I mean, just by luck, really.
Yeah.
I mean, I could have such a different story.
Yeah.
But I didn't, because I am a survivor. And I managed to pull myself out of all the crap.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard because I went through things nobody, well, some people might.
Of course. That's the story the ego will tell you. It'll tell you you're special and you're suffering. And even though suffering can stink, look what suffering has brought you.
But you know what it all taught me is that without a mother or somebody that's taking care of you and loving you, you just feel like you could do anything you want because nobody cares.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it was.
That's how it felt for you. I understand.
Yeah, I could do whatever I want. I can remember coming home at midnight and living with my grandmother, who was old, really old, and changing my clothes and going back out. And she never said a word.
Wow.
And I was a teenager. It's like, you know, it's like when you know that somebody really, even though she did care, I know, but she just...
Different parenting skills.
Her mind was on her daughter, who was like...
Right.
My aunt, who was in an asylum for like 20 years.
Yes, of course, she's wrapped up in that.
Mm-hmm.
Because she wants to be a good mother,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, because she took her out.
Right.
So after they did a lobotomy.
Oh, my word.
Yeah. And then she brought her home to live with me, who as a teenager then stopped having friends come over because, unfortunately, this woman was not only mentally ill, but physically she had some of the attributes that come with that. Like, I don't know, she had hair all over her face and her hands were all, like, mangled, twisted, and she was not good to look at.
Mm.
And so my grandmother took her out of the asylum.
Mm-hmm.
And basically ended my years as feeling secure and having friends over and stuff. So she took care of her daughter, but it like really screwed me up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you go on and on. Circumstances are what they are.
Well, I'm interested still in what you had said about parenting being so deep now. Like, everybody's super looking into this and what's the right thing.
Sometimes I feel like it's born in there. And as you get older,
mm-hmm,
and mature, it's supposed to just be there.
Or not.
Or not. But most people realize they just don't have it,
mm-hmm,
and don't become parents.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But otherwise, I don't feel like parenting, in one level, is anything you could learn. Maybe like if you live in Nigeria and you could teach them not to give the kids dirty water, you know, that kind
right.
of thing.
So, yeah.
That's
okay.
The kind of thing you learn.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, you know, like your kid falls down and scrapes a knee and starts crying. You don't think about anything. You just run to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's within you.
Right. So there's no right or wrong way. That's what you're imparting on us today, right? There's no
I'm saying that parenting has to come from inside. It doesn't come from learning it on the outside. It just doesn't.
That's right. And so self-study on the inside as a parent...
Yeah.
Could be a really great...
Oh, it would have been great if I knew about it then, but in those days, mm-hmm, who ever heard of the word self-study? Nobody. Right. stick the kid in the playpen in the back of the station wagon and go.
Yeah. Listen to what, listen to these 10 unique parenting styles from around the world. This is just to prove that there's just no right or wrong way. There's cultural ways, there's belief systems, there you do the best you can. What you know, what you think you know, and who you think you are as a parent and as a person is directly how you're going to parent. So getting other perceptions, widening your perception, and knowing that you're not trying to reach this place of perfection, because there is no such thing as perfect. None. So in India, in Solapur, India, they do something called baby tossing.
What?
I'm going to put this video up on functionalyogaonline.com.
I mean, the thought of it is horrible.
Listen to this. Babies are thrown from a 15-meter tower. It's about 50 feet. And catchers hold a sheet below for babies to land on. This sounds absolutely frightening, but luckily there have been no reported fatal incidents in the 500 years they have carried on this tradition.
Oh, my God.
In Bali, babies cannot touch the ground until they reach 3 months of age. It is believed that the newborn's purity can be defiled through any contact with unclean ground. Finally, at 3 months, the family holds a ceremony where the baby sets foot upon the ground for the very first time.
Now, how many people know about that? Nobody.
No, and when we're all sitting there trying to get perfect grades as kids, trying to be the perfect parents, the ones that, oh, it's so great you communicate with your child, and it's so great that you read them a book every single night. There is so much conflicting data out there as to overparenting, underparenting, have a spouse, don't have a spouse, you need a spouse, you don't need a spouse. In Eastern Cape of Africa, the custom is practiced on the third day of life of a baby. It's called Sifudu, which means passing child through smoke. I personally like this because I think I have been born with a jacked nervous system, so this would have probably benefited me. This smoke is made by leaves that have an exceptionally pungent smell from the Sifudu tree. The baby's held upside down toward the smoke. Apparently, the ritual is such a shock to the babies that they don't even cry. This ritual is to ensure that the baby is never afflicted by fright, timidness, or shyness.
Mm.
Do you imagine doing that here?
No, I can't.
I know. And I think there was one other that I really, really liked. Oh, this was very interesting. Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
In Kenya, they don't make eye contact with their newborn babies, as eye contact is a form of authority, and they don't want to bestow such power on a baby. Mothers carry their babies everywhere, but do not indulge their young ones' cries. I mean, I'm taking that as eye contact is looked at as like whatever I say goes when the parent looks at the kid, and they want to respect the child by not looking it in the eye. Who are we to say that that's right or wrong? Because I guarantee you, if we told Kenya people that we gave our kids time out, I don't even know if that's in fashion anymore, but go into the corner and count to 20. Or I'm going to take your iPad away for a day because you did this or that wrong.
That would get them.
I'm sure that they would think, what are you doing there? There's no right or wrong. But if we have some self-awareness about who it is in you that is parenting, if it's just our ego mind that's parenting, is there another available area in which to parent from? What about balance in parenting? Wanting to be your child's friend and also at the same time making them understand that you are the parents, so you're there to guide them.
It's just communication. There you go again.
Yeah. So communication and relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Mom. Thanks for getting on and giving us your wise words about raising all these kids.
You're welcome.
And I love you.
And I love you more. My teeth itch.
So maybe this has inspired you to go have a conversation with your mom or your dad, or to just investigate how other cultures parent, and to investigate that if you are at the age before you're having kids where you can dive into some self-study, it can only heighten the cultivation of the relationship you're going to be having with your child, and remembering that there is no perfection. So if you want more information about this podcast, you could go to functionalyogaonline.com. And we thank you very much for joining us. See you soon. Bye.
I'm in a generous mood. Let's grant this proposition. Let's say it's true, as somehow every child is special. What about every adult? Isn't every adult special too? And if not, then at what age do you go from being special to being not so special? And if every adult is special, then that means we're all special, and the whole idea loses all its fucking meaning.
Music and editing, special thank you to Ian Hatton. If you'd like more information on Ian, go to mixforpix.com.